Mentioned beetles guarding the place, a frontal penetration of the cave was out of the question. He saw a rough but scalable natural staircase, curving up 30 or 40 feet from the canyon floor, and swerving over and down to a point directly beside the cave entrance. As they headed up, JB was struck by the brooding majesty of the place. He could almost understand why the Indians believed a supernatural power guarded the Black Hills. They had scaled perhaps half of the staircase's length, cautiously approaching a projecting granite slab they would have to squirm around. Jack suddenly stopped. The youth was peering intently at the canyon's opposite wall.
I hear something. Like what?
Like that?
JB rolled behind the outcropping and came up with his Uzi. The outcropping was over 7 feet wide at its base and provided enough cover for everyone, as long as they sat scrunched up, knees folded against their chests. Unfortunately, it was barely 4 feet tall. Jack cautiously peered at the opposite wall of the canyon, the only place for the shots to have originated. The sniper was well hidden. If it hadn't been for the teenager's keen sense of hearing, JB might have been killed.
Spotted him. An Indian? Only saw the gun.
Christy passed the Steyr SSG-70 to JB. He peered through the image-enhancing scope and followed Jack's direction to the reflected light. He spotted it and took slow aim, centering the crosshairs, waiting for the sniper to show more of himself than just his gun barrel. Jack lifted his head until the top of his white mane rose above the edge of the outcropping. JB glimpsed a dark arm and head through the scope. A dark shape slithered over the lip of the canyon wall and fell to the canyon floor.
It's Hellstrom's people. They must have figured we were coming here.
He'll send men up on both sides to block us off in two directions.
There's two across from us, two more above us.
We have been cast in the roles of the proverbial fish in a barrel. They will not have to expose themselves to point their weapons down and shoot. Maybe so, maybe not so.
JB pawed around in his bag and pulled out an oval Gren, the thin metal walls encircled by rubber rings.
What are you planning to do with that?
Take care of the cold hearts above us.
You'll have to arm it and throw the damn thing straight up, JB. It might drop back down and blow up in our laps.
This is a DM-19 incendiary Gren with a phosphorus filler. It has a pull cord arming device, but detonation occurs when the casing breaks.
JB tossed the grenade to Jack. JB turned his back to the outcropping and leaned as far back as it would allow. He looked straight up, holding the Steyr to his shoulder.
Jack, when I say now, I want you to throw the Gren straight up over our heads. Try to put a little effort into it so it'll land on the top of the wall, but it doesn't matter if you do. Just make sure you throw it high and straight.
JB flattened himself against the rock and fitted his eye over the scope.
Now!
Jack lobbed the bomb up in a straight line. JB followed the Gren's vertical flight through the scope, and when it lost its momentum and began to drop, he waited until the small object was level with the edge of the canyon wall. A fireball bloomed, and tongues of flame curled in all directions.
Phew! Flash right him.
JB hitched over and saw two men on the facing edge of the canyon. He took out one with a Steyr.
Time to move. I'll lay down cover and fire.
Switching to his Uzi, he kept the remaining Sekhman up there pinned down, afraid to raise his head, until the five people had reached the bottom few feet of the stone staircase. Then JB grabbed his sack and scrabbled out on the ledge.
Don't let them get away!
Fleur, Christy, Doc, and Jack had taken cover behind rock tumbles beside the cave entrance the moment they jumped from the stone staircase. JB slid down to join them.
As long as we stay down, we're safe. But if we try to make a run for the cave, we make excellent targets.
Christy and JB exchanged hard-eyed, knowing looks. It was only a matter of time before the Sekhmen got in position to lob grins at them, or the sniper above would pick them off.
This reminds me of the time I took my daughter to see Buffalo Bill's Wild West show.
Fleur stared at Doc incredulously.
The climax of the performance was a stirring scene of settlers beset by bloodthirsty Indians. When events looked their darkest, the gallant Colonel Cody led the U.S. cavalry in a charge to rout the savages and set things aright.
A movement on the canyon rim caught JB's eye. The head of the Hellscale sniper was silhouetted against the blue of the sky, and sunlight gleamed dully up the gun barrel as he brought it into firing position. Before JB could raise his Uzi, the Sekhmen's head suddenly acquired a new and different shape. and the automatic rifle in his hands tumbled down the face of the cliff. Third-party bullets punched gouts of dirt from around the Sekhman's cover. JB scanned the towering walls and saw at least half a dozen copper-skinned men on horseback, men with feathers in their long black hair, paint on their faces, and guns in their hands. He recognized Touch the Sky among them.
That ain't your Colonel Cody or the U.S. Cavalry, Doc.
I'm not going to complain, are you?
JB wasn't going to complain, but he did wonder whether the Lakota, after killing the Sekhmen, might end up blasting them down. He doubted that Touch the Sky's arrival was designed to pull their fat out of the fire. More than likely, he was taking advantage of the opportunity to rid the Black Hills of white intruders once and for all.
The Lakota have those Sekhmen occupied. Let's hit the cave.
No time like the present.
The five people climbed quickly over the rocks and sprinted for the cave opening. As they darted inside, JB risked a backward glance and saw the Lakota astride their ponies, swerving away from the edge of the canyon and galloping toward its mouth. If Hellstrom lurked anywhere back there, the Indians pounding arrival would flush him out. The cavern had a huge, irregular dome shape. The sunlight slanting into the canyon reached only a few yards past the opening of the cave. Beyond that, darkness was a congealed mass, and none of the companions moved toward it.
Remember what Hellstrom said about the beetles.
They remained at the mouth of the cave, hunkering down on either side of it, not shooting, just watching, waiting, and listening. The Sekhmen didn't fire at them. They had to be aware of their situation, being trapped in the middle between the guns in the cave and the guns of the Sioux. But they stayed where they were, behind cover.
JB, shouldn't we look for that Mattrans gateway?
I don't want to bump into those flying mechanical bugs in the dark. Besides, we should stay and finish it with Hellstrom.
Nervous too about going back there blind.
We may not have a choice if our men make a charge.
Our men? I was under the impression you felt thoroughly disaffected from your former fraternity.
You're welcome to go out there and join them if you think they'll let you. Of course, if they do, I'll chill you personally.
Suddenly, the AMAC jounced into view, with hard-riding Lakota flanking it, shooting at its armored hide. A warrior was crouched on the roof, clinging to the periscope. JB recognized the Indian as Touch the Sky. Though the windshield was tinted, he assumed Lars Hellstrom himself was behind the wheel. The AMAC kept coming on a straight course for the cave entrance.
Let him have it!
Ricochet sparked from the front bumper guard. The windshield had wared a few stars, but it didn't break. Nothing less than armor-piercing rounds could wound the vehicle, and though there was some in the sack, there was no time to load them into their weapons. So, JB snatched a grin from his sack.
God damn, that's good wag armor! Move!
The companions began to run into the blackness. The AMAC rocketed through the cave opening, and the driver cut the wheel sharply to the right, stomping the brakes at the same time. The resulting skid wasn't controlled, and the rear end floated around in a 180-degree turn. The swinging rear of the AMAC slapped against Fleur, swatted her off her feet, and flung her to the right, against the cave wall. The wag continued to skid in her direction. The rear of the AMAC hit the rock wall hard. The woman was pinned between the armored wag and the stone wall of the cavern. In a microsecond, the life had been crushed out of her body. JB and his friends kept running through the dark throat of the cave, and within a few dozen yards, they couldn't see their hands in front of their faces.
It's too dark. Slow down. Everybody link hands.
JB pulled a small pen flash from his pocket. The light was hardly more than a needle of white incandescence, piercing only a few feet of the glowing blackness. As they walked, hand in hand, the cavern widened, and the ceiling grew in height. Irregularly formed stalactites hung from above. The light glinted off mineral deposits embedded in the fissured walls. The walls were also decorated with faded, crude paintings and carvings, representations of bizarre figures and shapes. They were obviously very old.
Petroglyphs. Now I see why Touch the Sky didn't care to enter this place. It's a holy spot. Hellstrom isn't worried about holy spots. If he gets a bead on us with one of those SA-80s, he can cut us to pieces without getting close.
Turn out the light.
They plunged into absolute blackness, which lasted only for a moment, for in the gloom before them shone a fiery red orb, casting a blood-colored luminescence over their faces.